You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th, hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
With threats to our nation waiting around every corner, adaptability is more important than ever. When conditions change without notice, quick strategic thinking is crucial, and with obstacles consistently impending, determination is essential in overcoming them. It's this willingness, decisiveness, and resilience that sets Marines apart. With our fighting spirit, we don't just fight battles, we win them. Marines are the constant our nation counts on to fight the unknown, and through adaptable problem solving, we do just that. Learn more at marines.com.
What have we learned, Josh, in our brief exposure to him, other than the fact that you can have the worst inning of your life as you put a Jays uniform on? And gave up 11 homers.
No, only two homers, but he did give up 9 runs. He needs to find another job. He really does. I'm not mad at him. He just needs to go away.
And welcome to episode number 70 of Artificial Turf Wars, where we've secretly replaced everyone with Ryan Goins, and nobody noticed. I am your host, Ryan Goins, and I am joined this week by Ryan Goins. And our third man in the booth, Ryan Goins.
How's it going, Ryan?
It's going good, Ryan. Ryan, how is it?
Hi, Ryan. I'm good, too.
That's not true at all. Of course, I'm joined by Josh Hausam and Nick Dyka, where we will have an opportunity to discuss the wild card, Estrada being claimed on waivers, Bautista having a bit of a good streak, Marcus Stroman keeping on rolling. We've seen Rob Refsnyder. What have we learned? We've seen Ryan Goins get stepped on, which will give him an opportunity to come by and pick up a gold star if he wants to, which we'll get into later. Got a catcher back. We've said goodbye to J.P. Howell and Mike Olman. And we're going to see some other people maybe come back. We'll touch on those possibly returning from injury. We have your questions, and we have not one but two gold stars, which I've already given away. One is involving Ryan. Okay, I've said Ryan Goins more than I'd care to in any one podcast. Josh, the wild card. Is there a reason they call it the wild card being illustrated at this point in the season?
I don't think you could put it better than that. I was going to make the similar kind of joke. There are now, because the Jays just finished winning their game, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9 teams within 3.5 games of a wild card spot, including the two at the top. 9!
And now, five of those teams are at or below 500. Toronto.
Four of them.
Toronto, Baltimore, Texas, Tampa Bay.
Oh, because Seattle's 500, yes.
How is the American League this bad, Nick?
I don't know. It wasn't this bad last year. The Jays would be well out of it if this was anything like 2016. But it just seems like there's a lot of teams in the AL that just I think the biggest through between all the teams, or the thread that ties them, is there's not much pitching. All the teams ahead of the Jays like are really struggling. If you go on any of the roster depth chart sites and look at these teams' rotations, they're all pretty less than ideal.
Is that the problem, Josh, do you think?
I think that's part of it, but I also think it's just a lot of it's just some of these teams have just been brutalized by injuries. But I mean, if you think about it, like the teams ahead of the Blue Jays right now, Baltimore, Texas, Tampa, Seattle, the Twins, the Royals, and the Angels, there's some teams that you'd think would be this bad and are. But then you get teams like Texas, Toronto, and even potentially Tampa that expected to be a lot better and have just either been hurt or seriously underperformed.
And
yeah, I think.
Go ahead.
Oh, I was just going to say, I think Texas, because actually, Josh, as a heads up, I was, as Josh is my editor in chief at BP Toronto, and I'm going to be sending him a wild card piece tomorrow. But yeah, Texas has the best expected winning percentage, I think, of any of the teams in the wild card race. But the thing with Texas is they kind of already waved the white flag when they traded Yu Darvish. And so even if like Texas and Tampa are the two best teams, I feel like they've kind of got a tough slog ahead of them, just given that like
they have
been decimated.
But at that point, all these teams have problems, and so it's going to be just an ugly finish. I think that's kind of the way to sum it.
Well, what's absurd to me is that the two teams that did trade away significant assets, the Jays and Texas, it didn't make any difference. They're still where they were.
It's and like, teams that picked up, like Seattle, Tampa.
Didn't matter.
No, and same with the Angels. The Angels are still right there.
And I can't,
yeah,
like... I look at the Angels and I see it. Well, I look at most of these teams and I see some deeply flawed teams. And yet, hey, playoffs could be yours.
Yep.
Which, of course, makes the Estrada waiver claim, I guess, in theory, interesting. Especially if you're a newer fan and you don't understand anything about the August revocable waiver process. So, Josh, do you want to give people the 2-minute primer on why it's not such a big deal when someone gets claimed?
No, it's pretty simple, really. In August, you're still allowed to trade players. The July 31st deadline is the non-waiver deadline, but they have to clear waivers first. If they get claimed on waivers, the team has three choices. They can either let the player go, pull him back, or work out a trade with the team that claims him. So in the case of Estrada, he was claimed, as reported by our site, by the Yankees. So the Jays had 48 hours to work out a deal with the Yankees, and they're not going to do so. So he will be pulled back and stay with the team.
So, to clarify for people, what order do teams have an opportunity to pick that player? Because I think that kind of gets obscured.
Yeah, so it's a reverse order of the standings within your league. So it would go from whoever's last in the American League right now,
which I guess is
the White Sox, all the way up to the Astros. And then it would go to the last place team in the National League, which is the Phillies, and then up to the Dodgers. And so by the Yankees putting the claim in, no NL team even had a chance.
So sometimes team will claim knowing that they're never going to work that trade out, forcing another team to stick to its guns, supposedly. So there is some strategy here that is not necessarily 100% straightforward.
Yeah. I mean, Nick, if you'd like to weigh in on this, but basically that's what the Yankees did. They'd have no desire to trade for Estrada, but they didn't want Houston or Boston to get him.
Do you remember the most famous waiver claim that went through in my Blue Jays tenure, Nick?
Actually, Greg, I don't know how old you are, so no.
I've got a couple guesses.
Alexis Rios?
Yes, that is the one. That was the saddest day of my Blue Jays fandom, to be perfectly honest. Signed him to a $60 million contract, an extension, and then the next August... We're like, wow, the White Sox claimed you. That's a relief.
Yeah.
See ya.
Yeah.
Pack your bags.
Yeah.
We can't afford to pay you for the next 5 years.
Yeah. The one thing I'm kind of curious about with the Estrada claim is that he got all the way to the Yankees because, like kind of we were just talking about, these AL wildcard teams are pretty flawed. And, I mean, the Orioles traded for Jeremy Hellickson to bolster their rotation last month. So you would think one of these teams would have taken a shot at claiming him. I'm curious, like, why didn't, like, the
money
Royals? Oh, he cost too much.
Yeah, he's got about $4 million left on his contract, so there's a risk the Jays could just say, okay, fine, take it. And so that's why he passed through.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah, and it's only 5 starts, maybe 6. So for $4 million, that's an expensive way to... And he hasn't been great all year. So
yeah, he's definitely a risk, but like, you should... Some of these teams are running out. I mean, the Angels staff ace right now is Ricky Nolasco. So I would have rolled the dice.
Who knows?
We do have, of course, other players to talk about. We have Jose Bautista to talk about, who is hitting for more power, I guess, which is what you want. Josh, what do we owe the Bautista surge here?
I have no idea. He just seems to go through these spurts. He always has. Even when he was good, he would have these spurts where he just would hit a home run every game. And he did that. Before 4 out of 5 games, he was hitting home runs. I think it helped some of the pitching he was facing. But he still hit them against some guys who were decent. I think it's just was in a little bit of a stretch where he's seeing the ball well, because he had those 4 home runs in 5 games, then he had 6 walks in his next 3 games. And for Bautista, the plate discipline is so important.
And I did the preview, and I was looking at that, and he has not had, relative to the last few years of his career, very much plate discipline at all in the last 2 months. He's been swinging at a lot of balls out of the zone that he has not historically done. So and it's remained quite steady. So I don't know. You would think that skill would age well, but apparently he's having a bit of a rough time with that. So I guess, is he finally just selling out and taking advantage of what is in the zone? I don't know.
Yeah, I think it's more just that he's got to cheat a little bit now, because he doesn't have the bat speed that he used to. So he's got to start a bit earlier. So those pitches he'd normally have time to see and lay off, he can't do that as well anymore.
Indeed. Would you like to talk about, Nick, Marcus Stroman? Because it's certainly a happy story there, it seems.
Yeah, he's been awesome. He's been consistent, and he's kind of eating up innings in a year where the Jays really need somebody to do that. I think that's kind of, to me, the most underappreciated element of Stroman's game, is that, you know, aside from his ACL sprain in spring training? It was ACL, right?
2 years ago.
Yeah, two years ago. Aside from that, he's been pretty healthy. And, you know, I think especially on a team where, you know, Liriano struggled and Sanchez has been injured, I think aside from his performance actually on the mound, Stroman's ability to just take the mound every fifth day has been a big help to keep the Jays where they are this year.
So why does the Toronto media huff and puff at the most consistent starter the Blue Jays have had? What's going on there? Because they write articles about how much of a damaging influence he supposedly is. Meanwhile, he's the only guy taking the ball every fifth day and doing something with it.
Well, there's the reason that most people think of first, which you can't dismiss it, right? You can't dismiss racism in all this. Yeah, that must be it. He's got a Napoleon complex. But I think that just people aren't used to what he's doing. I mean, we got a question about this later, but we can just answer it now. This was from Lou Brown 34. How could people not be a fan of Marcus Stroman's attitude on the mound? Arguably the most consistently fun part of the season is watching him. And that's it. Not only has he been out there a long time, he's been really fun to watch. And I think it's just more of a changing of the guard kind of thing. Like, these people who are having problems with it are not used to it. They're not used to seeing guys with that much flair on the mound, and it looks wrong to them, even if to us it looks entertaining and fun.
They certainly spilled a ton of digital ink about it, which is funny and sad at the same time. I want to move on to Rob Refsnyder, who we're already seeing a whole bunch, and Ryan Goins got his arm stepped on tonight, so we might see him even more. What have we learned, Josh, in our brief exposure to him, other than the fact that you can have the worst inning of your life as you put a Jays uniform on?
Worst game. He not only did make those 2 errors, he also had a golden sombrero.
Someday we should talk about sombreros and how the golden sombrero definition got screwed up to mean 4 strikeouts.
Sunday, not today.
Not today. But remind me next week when we have extra time why 4 strikeouts is not a golden sombrero. But Raph Snyder.
Yeah, I think we've learned is he's pretty, aside that that game notwithstanding, he's pretty good at putting the bat on the ball. He's you know, he does a lot of driving the ball the other way, and even though his numbers are terrible, there's at least some confidence that he has an approach at the plate, even if he's never going to be a good hitter or a good second baseman, really.
Have you had a chance to actually watch a game, Nick? I don't know what your schedule has been like in terms of seeing Mr. Raph Snyder move around.
No, I have. I was kind of like under the similar impression that Josh had, where he felt, at least from watching, like he was a little bit of a better hitter than Ryan Goins and Darwin Barney. But I just pulled up his numbers from last year with the Yankees, and it's almost as if the Blue Jays just keep splitting the Ryan Goins atom and just producing more Ryan Goins, which I guess is, that's the definition of a replacement player, really. But yeah, I think when it all shakes out, he's going to look pretty similar to Goins and Barney. He might provide a little bit of his, more of his value with the bat than with the glove than those two. But I think all in all, he's going to be a pretty comparable player to those two in terms of value added.
I have a silly question. How old is he?
He is 26.
That's it.
Wow.
So he's younger than the other options.
Yep. That's a big advantage.
Upside galore.
So we've got a lot of injuries to talk about. So I alluded to the Goins injury, but really the guy Raph Snyder and Goins and Barney are all playing around is Devin Travis. So I figured I'll throw that in here. There is an update, Josh, sort of, kind of, on Devin?
Yeah. Keegan Mathison has been sort of tracking this, watching him before the games. He's moving apparently very well laterally, fielding ground balls. So it looks like he's at least close to going out on a rehab assignment, which, if this team has any hope of trying to make this interesting, which, I mean, they are still somehow within striking distance, even though there's a zillion teams in front of them, they're going to need him just because of the Ryan Goins Adam splitting we just talked about.
Yeah, and we know one thing for sure, and that is a healthy Devin Travis is worlds better at the plate and just fine at second base than any of the other options. So, yeah, you don't want to rush him because he's apparently kind of injury prone, but wow, it would be nice to see him out there.
Oh, yeah.
So that injury swap, now we don't know who would, if Ryan Goins, I haven't seen the update because I've been manning four other things and not watching Twitter, but have we found out whether someone actually stepped on Ryan Goins' arm so badly they broke it? Or not?
No update there yet.
Okay. But we do have the return of Miguel Montero, which meant the DFA of J.P. Howell and Mike Olman. And there's another move I'm forgetting. Oh, Leon came back from the DL, right?
Bereavement list, but yeah.
Bereavement list. So he came back. That resulted in the two DL. So Montero, as much as he has not hit well in Toronto, should be an upgrade over anybody who was playing and become the everyday catcher. Are we happy, or are we still yearning for Russell Martin, Nick?
Well, definitely we're still yearning for Russell Martin. He's still one of, I think, the better options in the league, more so than just the better option over Montero. But Josh, I think you can probably speak to this a little more than me, but I was watching Raffy Lopez? Yeah. He looked like he was doing a pretty good job of just kind of like receiving the ball tonight, and he handled like some tough pitches in the dirt from Stroman and then Osuna later on. So I know he's not much with the bat, but it is nice to have somebody back there who's not a butcher either. So I guess that's a soft way of saying that we can ease Montero back into action, and I wouldn't feel terrible about it.
I'm not with you there.
Nope.
Robbie Lopez can catch. He can't hit. None of these guys can hit except Montero. He's, and given the state of this lineup, I mean, we recently had a game where I think Ryan Goins batted fifth.
True enough.
You need some guys who can hit. And Miguel Montero, despite what we have seen with his time in Toronto as Greg Lujo, he can hit. And he's not – he can't throw anymore. We've seen that. Teams run wild on him. But he's not a bad receiver. He's average now. So I'll take the average receiver who can hit over the guy who's a really good receiver who can't hit at all.
That's true.
I'm on if Team only Josh. We could,
yeah, if only we could move one of the left fielders back behind the plate. Throw Steve Pierce back there or something.
Steve Pierce has everything but a place to play, I swear. So the J.P. Howell experience is over. I don't think any of us are going to miss J.P. Howell. As much as Joe Smith was a success, J.P. Howell I've never seen two signings come so close and be so opposite. Unless
he pitched 11 innings.
And gave up 11 homers.
No, only two homers, but he did give up 9 runs.
Yeah.
7 walks, too. That did not work out.
We did hear about a signing of Brett Anderson, which you were mentioning pre-podcast. Could be intriguing, Josh. Tell me about Brett Anderson.
So here's the thing about Brett Anderson. For his entire career, he's been the guy that, if he stays healthy, he could be great. Because he's had some seasons where he showed that he can be really, really good pitcher. Last couple of years, he hasn't been that good, but also because he kept getting injured. So here's the thing with this Blue Jays team. Nick Tepish is their fifth starter right now. If you get 3 good starts out of Brett Anderson and he falls apart again, that's worth it.
Because you don't have to pay him too much?
Yeah, no, he's making the league minimum. If he comes up and he gets rocked, you cut him. But if he comes up and he's Brett Anderson, you just ride him until he blows up. And if you're trying to get back in the race, having that kind of guy for a few depth starts is really a lot more valuable than throwing out, I don't know, Matt Latos or Cesar Valdez or someone like that.
I feel as though Nick may have felt you were being unkind there.
No, I mean, this is another case where I completely agree with Josh. The interesting thing about Anderson is he's still just 29, and I think because he's been hurt so much, it feels like he's kind of older. But he's still only 29. He had a great year in 2015 with the Dodgers. He made 31 starts. His ERA was under 370. He pitched 180 innings. He has a not so long ago record of being a pretty quality major league pitcher. And yeah, the Jays are in dire need of quality major league pitchers. So even if he falls apart, or honestly, even if he gets rocked, I think he's worth the flyer given the other options they've been sending out there lately. What's the worst that can happen?
Yep.
Well, let's get weird.
Don't ask
now.
That question. We might find out.
Let's get weird. The other option, as you were saying, is now apparently Joe Biagini, who is toiling away in AAA, stretching out to be a starter, which they've tried before, and then they put him back in the pen and back and forth and everything. I'm at the point where I feel kind of bad for Joe because I'm not sure that he's really been set up to be successful. But how far away are we from seeing Joe Biagini major league starter?
5 days.
For sure, unless he blows up.
Well, I wouldn't say for sure. I think they'll give Tepish another start. But if Tepish is bad, it'll be Biagini who comes up because that's the guy they wanted in this role. You know, he went down and to build up innings, and he went 50-some-odd pitches, then 65, and he's going to hit 80-plus in his next time out, and then he'll be ready. The issue last time is he tried to build up his ability to go deep in games and his stamina in the big leagues, and that's really hard to do.
A necessity, I guess. Do you have confidence, Nick, in a Joe Biagini starter?
Given the Jays kind of lack of options right now, I think it's definitely a good idea to try it. I wanted to ask you guys too about was Biagini pitching from the stretch when he was starting in the majors? Because I heard something on the broadcast tonight. They were talking about how he wasn't pitching from the stretch because he was used to the bullpen. Or sorry, wasn't pitching from his windup because he was used to pitching in the bullpen. And I'm curious if this is going to basically like make him a more effective starter than he was kind of towards the end of his stay with the Jays earlier this year.
I don't think it matters that much.
No.
I mean, it's really all about comfort. You know, relievers pitch out of the stretches because they're used to it, but if you get to the point where that's the mechanics you're used to throwing with, it doesn't really necessarily make sense to go back to the full windup. So I wouldn't really consider that as a factor one way or the other. Guys like Yu Darvish essentially pitch out of the stretch the entire time sometimes. So,
right. Okay.
So, of course, the hole that's being filled is because, partially, that Aaron Sanchez has been unable to keep his finger together in one piece all season long, but he also is on the road to recovery. I'm sorry, do we have a timeline for him?
He's only about to get... He's only just getting on a mound now, or very soon. So it's not... This is the issue with him. It's like he's not ready yet, and he's not ready to start a rehab assignment yet. And so because of that, they're saying that he's likely going to have to come back in the bullpen just because this minor league season is going to end before he has a time to build his innings back up.
So how excited are we about Aaron Sanchez, eighth inning guy? Now, on the bright side, his fingernail might not explode as easily if he's only throwing one inning at a time. Just a thought.
Yeah. Nick?
Any quality innings are good quality innings, I think, for this Jays team, especially if they do keep kind of hanging around this wild card race. Obviously, it's ideal to have Sanchez in the rotation, but at this point in time, if he could come back and contribute as an eighth inning guy, it'd be silly to say no.
And I think it's worth mentioning, too, how overworked this bullpen has been. We've talked about it on this podcast before, but they're way up there in innings. Ryan Tepera is seventh in the league now. So having another guy who can push everyone down the depth chart just a little bit, I think could be huge as this team tries to finish out this slate of the season.
I'll be honest, whenever I see Tepera, Barnes, or Osuna called in, I expect them to have their arm in a little cart beside them on wheels and carefully wheel it out to the mound and then attach it so they only have to use it for the minimum amount of time. Yeah. It's like, my God, every night. It's like, you remember Everyday Eddie Guardado?
It's like, oh yeah,
Everyday Ryan Tepera. Doesn't roll off the tongue the same way. But I feel bad for him, man. It's gotta take its toll. Have I covered all of the shuffling and changes and back and forth?
I think so.
I think I got there. That means it's time for questions.
Time now to hear from our listeners.
That just seems silly.
Here are the rules. First, I ask a question, then you ask a question.
Now, how does that sound, sweetheart?
Could you repeat the question, please?
And I got to say that last week, I think people wore themselves out. We had like a billion questions. And this week, it was not a billion. And we put the request out way earlier.
Yeah, and we also already answered one, so we only have three left.
All righty. Do-do-do-do-do. If you were commish, this is from Minor Leaguer, what would you keep or abolish trade waivers? Well, there's a weird question for you, Nick.
Yeah, I like activity. I think it makes following and being a fan interesting. And so for me, the idea of moving the non-waiver trade deadline back in time to, I don't know, the end of August or something like that doesn't really bother me and abolishing the waivers, especially like this year's a great example with all these teams kind of bunched in the middle of the standings, technically in the wild card race. I think it would be great to just give more time to have things shake out and see things happen. So yeah, my vote as commish would be to get rid of the waivers.
I'm voting no.
You're gonna keep them?
Yeah.
What's the historical context? What's the historical context for them even being there? This is the part that confuses me.
Well, I think the idea is just putting in a deadline to force teams to make moves. Because teams will not move until they have to. We've seen that.
Wow.
It's like, oh, it's July 31st. Oh, we better go get the guy. Like, Yu Darvish was traded with 2 minutes to the deadline. Like, why?
But my view then would be, screw this whole month of... This month in between, where you have the non-waiver trade deadline, but the guys are still eligible for the playoff roster, is just weird. August 15th, nobody is eligible for playoff... Anybody traded after August 15th is not eligible for playoff roster. And
Get behind that.
And September 1st, rosters expand still in order to soften the load of whoever you've got up there.
Yeah, okay.
So, yes, I would get rid of waivers and replace it with an even crueler system. At Baseball Her, which is Ball Her, what would you do with Estrada? Okay, Josh, your answer is hug him and congratulate him. Nick, what would you do with Estrada?
Yeah, I would keep him. I would have hoped that the Jays were just kind of dangling him to see if they could get anything really tasty for him and fail, which they probably weren't going to get. And given that, I think the highest upside move is to keep him, given where the Jays are in the standings, and assuming that the $3 to $4 million that he's still owed is not a huge deal for the Jays to eat. My thought would be to try to just keep him.
And resign him forever and ever and ever.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. I was going to give you a chance to answer that, but obviously you got your answer. Just lifetime contract.
Yeah, the Tim Wakefield deal.
Isaac at IB Blue Jays. Are those actually... Okay, there's two questions connected here. Do these major leaguers really let their straightest pitch get away from them as often as they seem to? And, of course, Josh, he would like to hear you, the pitcher, talk about how likely it is that an errant fastball inside is intentional. I assume he means intentional to hit someone.
Yeah. Or he could just mean the fastball inside, like way up and in. Is that really an error, or is the guy trying to throw it there? Even if it doesn't hit the guy. It happens a lot more as a mistake than you think. You know, pitchers physically train their bodies to work in a specific box of the zone. And if you're trying to, if you're working down, and you try to go up and in on a pitch, it's a different mechanic. And so every now and then you'll just release the ball a little too early or a little bit too high, and the ball will sail up and in, you know, to the arm side. If you're throwing it way up and in and hitting guys on the opposite side of the box, though, that's really hard to do by accident.
I feel like pitchers tell people that they can throw the ball to within 6 inches of where they want to, and that's what they believe. But I don't think those 6 inches are any kind of realistic average measurement of where a pitch actually ends up from where they want it to.
No, I think that it's, for major leaguers, they miss their spot on average by like 10 inches or something like that. It's really not that close to hitting a spot, but just these huge margins you're dealing with, right? So arm side, you're going to hit guys by accident or come up and in by accident. But glove side, it's hard to miss that much.
So I should only get offended if a lefty comes up and in on me?
Yeah, I mean, if he comes up and in and dings you, it's probably on purpose. He's at least trying to come way up and in.
Sorry, does Nick bat left or right?
No, right.
the Aaron Loop syndrome is the arm side miss where he keeps hitting left-handed batters.
Yeah.
Poor guys. he's done less of that this year, I admit. I stand corrected. All right. Connor Moore at the Seahound asks, who finishes their career with more wins for the Blue Jays, Sanchez or Stroman? Nick, there's a tough one.
It is a tough one because I'm pretty convinced that I think Marcus Stroman is going to have some fairly significant year-to-year fluctuations in terms of like his ERA and kind of like his overall performance. But I think that's just based on kind of like his strikeout rate and his ground ball rate. I mean, I don't know what a Marcus Stroman ERA is going to look like if you've got a 37-year-old Tulo at shortstop, for instance. So I think he's going to be the less consistent pitcher than Sanchez, but the rub is that Sanchez, one, he's obviously got these blister issues he's dealing with that could be a problem moving forward. I know guys like Rich Hill have dealt with them on more than like a 1 year basis. And the other thing is, given how hard Sanchez throws, he might be more susceptible to like a major arm injury. So weighing it
so
all,
you're picking Strowman.
Yeah, I'm still going to go with Strowman just by virtue of his ability to take the ball.
Josh?
I'm going the other way. Sanchez is the younger guy, and I think that this will be behind him. I just think that that upside is so high that he's going to have a lot of seasons where he wins 17, 18, 19 games. Last year he had 15. Strowman's never won more than 10, which is what he has right now. So, but it still wins, and it's a dumb stat, and it's impossible to predict.
Which is why I'm going to sort of dodge the question. The question as far as who's going to have the most wins, I would probably say Estrada. Who's going to throw the most innings for this team?
Strowman.
Yeah, Strowman. Strowman's going to throw more innings. Just because the predictor of injury, the best predictor is injury. And the guy who's had a whole lot of injuries that all relate to pitching specific things is Sanchez right now. Now that could change, but my crystal ball only sees what's happened so far, and I can't really see into the future. One more question popped in just to mess with us. We appreciate the real timeness. Sam Dowdle at Sam Dowdle asks, the Blue Jays have demonstrably better results this season when playing a second string defensive lineup. Discuss. Josh?
I argue with the premise. I don't think that adding in Ryan Goins at shortstop or Rob Refsnyder at second or Ezekiel Carrera in the outfield is better defensively. I think it's worse. I think it's just a fluky nature of baseball that this is the way it's worked out. I mean, the Jays have a better record without Josh Donaldson than they do with him. It's just a fluke.
Nick?
Yeah, well, is some of it the fact that the Jays kind of like better defensive players haven't been playing like the best defensive players anyway this season? So maybe like they're losing the value they gain from those first string defenders, so to speak. Like Pilar is having a worse year defensively, and obviously Tulo was before he got hurt. I don't know. It's got something to do with that.
To say.
I'm saying their first string defenders aren't adding much value because they're struggling to play defense this year, and so the second string defenders aren't actually as much of a downgrade as they would have been in the past.
I'm gonna say correlation is not causation. I'm gonna much like you, Josh. I don't know that you could prove that the two were really connected. I didn't buy the argument that when Bautista was hurt, the Jays played better last year. It had anything to do with anything whatsoever.
For sure. I guess what I'm saying is, you know, if the Jays can produce so much value on the field, it might be that the second string defenders are better hitters enough that it's compensating for the fact that the first string defenders are having a worse year, so they're not adding that value.
Oh yeah, I follow you. I don't think the impact is great enough that any of it necessarily means anything, but there may be some impact there. We'll leave that. I think we'll go to now. Normally, at this point, we hand out a bunch of do overs and we get all down on people, but no gold stars.
I think that's rather brilliant.
So I did good, right?
I mean, I would have thought you'd get a gold star.
You enjoy that? You've earned it.
Yes, indeed. We have earned a gold star. Who has earned the first gold star? I think Ryan Goins should earn the first gold star. Because after Sunday's game, we noticed something, Nick, about the look on the field everyone observed. What was a little different about Sunday's game?
There was a lot less a red, I think, than after most Sunday games.
Yeah. There was no blood on the uniforms after.
Because Aaron Sanchez wasn't pitching.
Oh, but also no Canada Day ridiculous jersey, which I totally don't understand why they thought every Sunday would be good to put the Blue Jays in red and white uniforms. Apparently, after getting just blasted by a dozen runs or so on a couple of occasions, they let the players pick, and the players picked home whites. And then Ryan Goins came after the game and suggested a couple of things. He suggested that they be burned, I think, was one of them.
The quote was, "We should probably shred him, burn him. I don't know, give him away to charity or something."
I think he started with, "Oh, I hate them, burn them, shred them," and he thought, "Well, that's not nice. Maybe we could somehow recover something for someone here." And he threw in the charity thing. But I think he'd rather just go all Chris Sale on him.
Yep.
I don't okay. There is a clear, in my mind, and I don't even like it, but there is a clear third jersey for this team. Josh, what is the clear third jersey for Sundays?
The gray one?
No. No.
Powder blue.
Yes! Nick has it.
Oh, I thought you meant among the ones they've had. That's a fourth jersey then, but really.
No, but the rotation should be
nowhere home. Road grays at home, you're right.
Right. So, home whites, blue tops, either home or road, and frickin' powder blues. Like, it's not rocket science. You went retro with the whole uniform look. Just bring back the powder blues if you want to do something. But marketing department has not crossed that bridge yet. I will hand out. Oh, go ahead.
I was going to say, regardless of the red jerseys, I think this is a good omen, because the last time I remember a Blue Jays team doing this was the year they won the World Series, when they got rid of the white panel on the front of the hats was that 92 or 93?
That was 93.
Yeah, 93. They stopped wearing the white panel hat, and I think the team went on a big run, and they never went back. So I'm taking this getting rid of the red jerseys as a good omen for non-aesthetic reasons, too.
Alrighty.
Okay.
And you have a different gold star, Josh, from a different team, but still worthy of accolades.
Yeah. So we've talked before about Angel Hernandez, probably more than once on this podcast, for being, pretty much terrible. Turns out there's a player in the major leagues who openly agrees.
That's dangerous.
It is dangerous. Ian Kinsler's probably going to get fined for this one. So he said, and I quote, "I'm surprised at how bad an umpire he is. I don't know how, for as many years he's been in the league, that he can be that bad. He needs to reevaluate his career choice. He really does. Bottom line." And he continued, "This has to do with changing the game. He's changing the game. He needs to find another job. He really does. I'm not mad at him. He just needs to go away."
One day Ian will open up and tell us how he really feels.
Oh, he continued. "But when it becomes blatant like this, there's a problem. What is he doing on the field? What's he doing out there? It's pretty obvious he needs to stop ruining baseball games."
Oh, wow. Yeah, there's a fine there.
Spitting fire.
I think most fans, would you not say, Nick, think at least one or two umpires are worthy of exactly that chewing a new one?
Oh, absolutely. And if I was a major league player making, however many millions of dollars a year, I would just earmark a certain portion of my salary to fines. I'd be like, I'm going to speak my mind, because these quotes are amazing. And yeah, Ian Kinsler is awesome for saying this. I would just be like, I'm going to spend $800,000 of my $15 million salary this year on going off on crazy umpires and things like that.
But by the way, he said, "If I get fined for saying the truth, then so be it. He's messing with baseball games blatantly." Love it.
So Ian Kinsler's line, Nick's line is, "I'm just here so I can get fined."
Yeah.
Oh my goodness. So yeah, a big old gold star, Ian. It's not that far from Detroit to Toronto, so you can swing by and pick one up at Josh's house if you can find it. Goodness. So I think the Jays, who are 5-3 in the last week, and they really do need to be 8-0 at this point to inspire our confidence, but hey, 5-3, we'll take it. Podcast is a little later than usual. I think the 5-3 Jays are what we're going to rest on here, unless, of course, you, Josh, have a final thought.
I do. It's kind of a goofy thing from today's game. So in the seventh inning, the Jays had first and second. They were pitching. They had runners on first and second. Loop came in, and he walked Souza on and then right after Strowman had just walked, I can't remember who it was, Miller or something like that, and on pitches that were really, really close. So when Gibbons went out to make the pitching change, he started jawing and he got ejected from the game, and then he just kept walking and made the pitching change anyway. I love it. He's not even supposed to be allowed to do that. I mean, technically, they could have said there was no pitching change because that guy's not allowed to do it, but it was great. Great moment.
He did have the courtesy to come back and discuss with the umpire after the pitching change why he got thrown out. I think it would have been better just to walk right back into the dugout and walk right out of the stadium.
Just go back, make the pitching change, just keep walking, go out into the bullpen yourself.
Yeah, God, I'm out of here. Oh, yeah, I'm going for a beer. Oh, he has a lot of early beers. Do you have a final thought, Nick?
We were talking about it a little bit off air, but it's been another great week in the Joey Gavotto shenanigans series. I just hope he plays forever. I find him infinitely entertaining.
So this week's, which was my final note, was if you get a chance to see Joey Votto putting a foul ball into the stands, it's probably worth it. I mean, he's been known to chat with people and go back and forth with hecklers and everything else. He must have just had it and gotten tired of flipping a ball into the first row, because he picks up a dribbler up the first baseline and he launches it onto the roof of Wrigley Field. I don't know what possessed him, but it's the weirdest thing I've seen anybody do in a while. So
that's great.
Yes, and then later on, I would like to point out, in the same game, they played four outfielders against him. What did Joey Votto do, as they say? He hit a double.
Okay, I'm sorry. I just have to quickly jump in on that. That was the dumbest four outfielder position I've ever seen. How do you throw four outfielders in there and not have anyone within spitting distance of the foul line to the pole side?
That's our final thought.
Did you hear his quote when they asked him about how he approached a hitting with four outfielders?
No.
It was hilarious. It was something along the line of, when they go to four outfielders, I think about hitting it over all of them and into the stands. It's something I consider doing.
Yeah, he's got a little downstairs in him. And also, just a quick update, Goins not broken, says he's fine. His arm just went numb when he was stepped on, but it's just, he's okay now, just a gash on the forearm.
Oh, what a relief for our runners in scoring position numbers. All right, so thank you for joining in with us to episode number 70 of the Joey Votto Show. I have been your host, Greg Wisniewski, at Coolhead 2010, and you have been Nick Dyka at Nick Dyka and Josh Housam at Joshua Housam. Check
and
out.
We've all been Ryan Goins at
Ryan Goins. No, wait, he has it anyway. Check out our Patreon at www.patreon.com/turfpod if you think we're worth, oh, I don't know, $1 a month or something like that. And we appreciate you joining us, and we will talk at you next week.